I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive's fucked. Zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my
Hello and welcome to the 28th episode of the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I'm Lewis, and like a fire sale on wire hangers, this is happening.
Yes, we got news cucked yesterday on the third rail pretty hard with the Supreme Court story on this leak about this opinion about abortion. I'm sure that people will be, you know, there's tons that's going to happen with that in the very near future. In the meantime, we wanted to continue our discussion of Elden Ring because there's just a lot, I think, to discuss. And as we said with Laritz, there will, I think, definitely be a third part. I can anticipate a fourth, maybe even more. I mean, I'm not, you know, we'll see how much the game gives us to work with. But so far, it's given us quite a lot, I think. So yeah, especially I guess for you, because you haven't, this again is your first FromSoft game you're tackling in a serious way, right?
Yes, for sure. And yeah, I'm actually currently stuck.
Okay, cool, tell me more.
But it's interesting because of the mechanics of the open world, you know, you kind of go in one direction as far as you can, right? And then you get stuck because the enemies are too tough, or you can't figure a puzzle out, or a boss is too tough. And I am currently in a place where there are three bosses I'm trying to defeat at once, and they're all too strong. So
interesting. And yeah, typically grinding is not the way to go with these games. Are you tempted to grind, or is it just like what do you anticipate is the way to resolve the?
So what's funny is that one of the things I'm stuck on is the. And you know, I can just go around things. Like, I can go back and do minor stuff and clean dungeons out and stuff. But from what I've heard, one of the things I'm stuck is on is the Blackblade Teach, the boss that gives you the ash for that summon. And that summon is supposedly the thing that really gets you past the other two bosses I'm stuck on, which are Blackblade Malekith and Melania, who are like the two big, like the two, I think what the community is pretty consensus, like the two hardest bosses, I think, according to the community. Or so I don't feel totally off base that they're really messing me up, but apparently this summon is a really good counter to both those bosses, because they're both the bosses that I struggle with, which are bosses that they hit you very fast, so it's hard to learn the
pattern. Okay, so this I think is a great opportunity to talk about some of the stuff, because we were also talking about this a little bit off, before the show, and I think it's interesting. So I guess I didn't play Sekiro, so I don't know. I don't believe there was this kind of summon thing in Sekiro. I would have to double check. Definitely wasn't in Dark Souls or Bloodborne. It seems like an interesting It's not presented as an alternative to human multiplayer cooperative play. I believe, in principle, you can have both. You can summon a human to help you, or be summoned by a human to help you, and do the Ashes kind of NPC summoning thing. In practice, speaking for myself, I just haven't it just hasn't even registered as a thing really to do. And I understand that, you know, I think that one of the chief benefits, if not maybe in certain ways the chief benefit, is just drawing aggro, right? And having another body in the arena there with you to fight the boss with. I just, like, I don't know what you know, I guess I find human players typically more beneficial, or it just hasn't even like occurred to me. And I've noticed that when I have, you know, because I also like to cooperate and put my summon sign down and have people summon me to help them with their fights and stuff. I basically very, very rarely do I see anyone in doing the cooperative multiplayer who does one of the Ashes summons. And I don't know that it's interesting that there's this kind of bifurcation of, I guess, people who go around harvesting a bunch of grave glove warts and upgrading their summons and so on. There's other benefits to that too, of course. Primarily that it's not luck of the draw, and you don't have to wait around. There's no, connectivity issues. There's a lot of convenience, I think, built into it, in much the same way that the kind of NPC summons, which the game occasionally gives you, especially in that first fight with Margit. It looks like a human, but it's not, right? It's a AI. Sorry, go on. Yeah, what were you going to say?
Yes. That one is just there for Margit. Almost every major boss fight has one of those. You just have to do some stuff to find it and unlock it. I think all of the major boss fights, they don't pop up unless you do a side quest about the boss or some kind of side quest. Sometimes I think a few even have two. The thing is, the game is very good about if you bring in the AI summon or the AI, not or the AI NPC, the other quest person. It's a reward for defeating the quest, but it does make... They do buff the boss to compensate for that, so it's not a true... summons don't buff the boss.
Right,
the
way yes, that's another important difference, is that and it can make the fight way harder than it would be just by yourself. I've noticed some of the tree guardian fights. I have soloed a couple of those, and it's really... I actually quite enjoy those fights. I find them very... edifying in terms of what the game is even getting at. Maybe we can talk about that a little more later. Mm. But I really enjoy, and soloing them really isn't that bad. But on a couple occasions, actually, it was funny. So I put my summon sign down to help in a dungeon, one of those little side dungeons, and I got summoned same place on the map, just way above it, to one of those fights, and the fight was way harder because he had way more health, and so sometimes the scaling with the human summon, human companions will fuck you for sure.
Yeah. Also, I would I think there is definitely a case that the Ash system is designed to be a replacement for a human NPC, because there is one Ash that just clones you and all your gear. So effectively is a human player. It just clones the player character and all his gear and all his health. Well, nothing's at a health penalty, but he can heal. So it's a weird gray area, but there's absolutely a substitution for a human player in that case. Although some are just very interesting, and of course there's all kind of lore stuff behind it as well. There's, and also they can be, it's a good way that they can, you can... They're not necessarily rewards, because usually some are rewards, but if you meet a cool NPC, sometimes the reward will be you get the Ash of them to help you in fights, so you can kind of keep NPCs that are cool around.
Yes.
Or also that they're all based off enemy types, mostly. So it's hey, this enemy is barely bothering you, or you find this enemy obnoxious to fight. Well, you can use this enemy on your side now, and it's a cool, reversal, because... So there's... If you're fighting a boss, say, with, a really big, deep health pool, but it moves kind of slow, you find you're getting damage when you go and getting close, you can summon an Ash that is relatively weak on its own. It's not... It's low health. It's a single entity. But its attacks will slowly build up the Scarlet Rot effect, which is a poison effect in the game, that slowly drains the enemy's, health pool. And all these kind of little mechanics that certain enemies have that are really annoying to deal with in the open world, you most of them have an Ash that allows you to kind of put these mechanics that you find annoying and are so disruptive to you, put them on your side and kind of hoist the enemy by their own petard. And it also, I think, it grants a big sense of we'll talk about, I think, a lot about later about fairness and how fair certain mechanics are in the game. And I think the nastiest enemy tactic, or the whatever most unfair thing that the devs pull on you with a certain enemy becomes a lot more fair if you can do it yourself. The really annoying eagles with the knives on their feet, there's one ash that does that, so you have that fighting alongside you. You have one that does Scarlet Rot. You have one that can kind of teleport dodge. All this kind of stuff. And it's really, you know, it's really nice to have them on your side for once. Almost every enemy type even has just a pure clone of them. Like the those really obnoxious knights with no heads that throw stuff at throw their lance at you that are really tough.
Yeah.
Just one of those, and it's great. It's and one of those knights with the two swords that'll just mess you up real fast, that are hard like throughout the game. There's one of those. And when you can see them on your side doing all, they're not quite as powerful, obviously, because you're weaker than a boss, so that when they hit a boss, it doesn't do a ton of damage. But they are not, like, toned down in terms of, like, mechanically. Like, they will hit, they will stun the enemy, they will attack as fast as they do when they're, you know, playing against you. They're not really nerfed in the sense of, like, they don't know, they're not, like, nothing really super effective against you. And it's not super effective when you use it in terms of like animations and mechanics. They won't do as much damage, obviously, because a boss is a boss. So like certain things that one shot you won't one shot a boss, but they will do a pretty good chunk. And they can definitely help you stunlock a boss for sure if it's a big like a crowd. There's also like multiple summons, like so.
I've actually had a lot of that was one of the things that stuck out to me on as a, that brief note, and maybe we can talk about fairness after that. Or maybe this is part of fairness is that it's not clear to me how to inflict stagger on bosses. Like I haven't done it reliably. Please, yeah.
So I mean, I know you're trying to not use wikis or whatever because I couldn't find this out by myself, but I kind of did, but I confirmed it. So bosses have two health pools. Obviously, their visible health pool and an invisible, you know, poise pool or whatever you want to call it. And L1 attacks do almost no damage to the poise pool, but heavy attacks do. So if you're using only heavy attacks, you'll notice you're knocking bosses down or
okay, interesting, you know. Yeah. But I've tried because sometimes I'll that's what I guess I very rarely use just the straight heavy attack. Usually when I do, it's As part of a jumping attack. Yeah, and sometimes I'll stagger them after a jumping attack, but usually not. And sometimes I'll stagger them after a bunch of light attacks, but usually not. And it's been a little frustrating for sure.
A conventional heavy does the most poise damage.
So like interesting. Okay. And I'll try to use those more.
And from my like kind of back of the napkin math and memory, if you're using all heavy attacks on a boss, which is very hard to do, you'll probably down them, what, maybe four times in a fight? And if you use only lights, you'll probably down them once. You know? Some, if you want to do some like, kind of math on that.
Gotcha, okay.
So you're not going to do a ton of... Because some bosses obviously have a shitload of poise as well, you know, depending on the enemy type. But yeah, that's how that works. There's an invisible poise bar that you can... But you can drain it. I've noticed also like certain spells are actually really good. There's a spell where you throw a rock at somebody, like a big rock.
What is it like? It's a series. I've seen one that I think it's Onyx. It was a series of four rocks, right, or something like that.
There are many rock spells.
Okay. Yeah.
The one I've tried. There's one that's a ton of small rocks that's really shitty in my opinion. But there's one that throws a single large rock. And it does a shitload of poise damage.
Yeah, that sounds useful.
It's also it's slow moving, and 90% of bosses are not slow, you know, and they can dodge. There's a lot of mechanics in this game, and almost every boss is. It's very difficult to find like a mechanic that you're, especially one if you're not built around it. Like every boss has a build that can deal with it the best, but. Usually, the bosses are also like not won't be like insta killed or you know stunlocked by any kind of mechanic. They tend to be able to adjust to anything pretty well. Bosses that you wouldn't think can dodge that heavy rock will dodge that heavy rock pretty consistently, unless you're firing it from up close enough that they can mess you up pretty fast. So everything is pretty much balanced in that respect. I've only had a few bosses that I've been really able to really mess up with the Scarlet Rot effect, because a lot of them I think aren't made to deal with that one. A lot of double entity bosses too. Have you fought any like any double bosses yet?
Not yet.
So there's bosses that have like just two bosses where they have different health bars, but they also introduce two bosses where it's two bosses but they share the same health pool. And I found out you can knock like a poison or a Scarlet Rot effect on both of those, and it drains twice as fast because two things are hit with the poison effect. And with that thing, I got past the Godskin duo, which are considered a very hard boss, on my first try. It wasn't even a big deal. I had a summon and I had a spell that could put Scarlet Rot on him, so the summon aggroed one of them. I ran like hell, and then popped these spells on him. And then after that was done, I started the boss fight after having popped this double poison effect on them and took him down pretty quick. And I found that's, but most bosses have like counters for the poison at a certain point. Probably like the hard bosses, they'll just be very hard to hit with it. The poison attacks are very slow, or they'll simply it'll do like a little bit of damage, but they'll just be immune to the poison, because that's what I'm talking about. We get to cheating. Like most bosses are not immune to poison, but some just are, and it's just that way,
Right. Okay. So let's drill down then into this a little bit, because I think it speaks to just what the game is and what Miyazaki's doing, which is we've talked I think before about. Video games as a kind of instrument. I think FromSoft games exhibit that more than most, in terms of just giving you a kind of set of like, almost like musical keys or strings on a violin, right? Things you can play with, things you can do, and sort of letting you setting you loose. The trade-off is or the kind of the other whole of that is that the author, the designer, the person whose artistic vision is ultimately informing the experience or the production of the experience is presenting the player with a certain kind of challenge, or I guess you have like walking simulators and shit like that, but the primary means of communication is the designer is presenting the player with a certain kind of challenge, and so that within that there's then there's this whole interesting thing about difficulty settings, for example, right? And what is the game balanced around? I've been playing XCOM 2 because Mike inspired me to play more XCOM 2, and he has this awesome swastika windmill of friendship mod that you can put the flag happy windmill on your on all your XCOM player and all your soldiers, and that's a lot of fun. And I thought it was an opportunity to, because I mostly play on classic and I hadn't really played much with legendary, so I started some legendary. I was trying to get through a legendary campaign, and I found the experience basically just not fun. And I'm sure you could call me a pleb or whatever if you want, that's fine. I actually saw a bunch of people talking in forums about the game, like experienced veteran players who basically only play on legendary, just straight up admitting that a legendary run is determined by the first five missions, essentially what the procedural generation gives you in terms of enemy placements and stuff like that, and it's kind of out of your hands at a certain level, like how it's going to go, and that strikes me as I understand maybe in the mid game and late game that legendary setting may in certain ways be more challenging in a good way or more rewarding than classic, but that strikes me as an indication that admission on the part of players who play and like to play that difficulty setting, that actually that difficulty setting is kind of broken, and that it really only exists Like, the game is actually, like, the design intention is built around Classic, and, you know, other modes are kind of included if you just are a certain kind of masochist, right? That you can do that. And really, if you think about it, which I was thinking about it in connection with this episode, like, the thing about computers is in code is you can basically set the challenge to be arbitrarily difficult or arbitrarily easy. You know, you can, you know, if you want to, you can make it so the boss has an arbitrarily large pool of health and your attacks do an arbitrarily small amount of damage for, you know, essentially without, this is unbounded within just like the practical limits of physical reality as represented in the code itself. So, like, you know, challenge for its own sake doesn't really, you know, some people, I guess, like the experience of beating their head against a wall until it breaks. I do not. And so it becomes a question of tuning. It becomes a question of, like, what specifically is the challenge that the designer is putting before you. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Miyazaki and FromSoft is he doesn't provide an easy mode, but he also doesn't provide a hard mode. Like, there's no equivalent to Legendary in XCOM or, you know, like Super Secret. I mean, there's New Game Plus, but that's a different thing, right? And then the New Game Plus does scale, but it also only scales. I haven't checked for Elden Ring, but I know in literally every other previous game, I believe it plus, like, New Game Plus 7 is, like, every other new game, that's as hard as it gets in terms of the enemy scaling and stuff like that. So that tells me a lot, actually. That tells me that there's been a lot of thought that's gone into, you know, enemy placement and all that kind of stuff, and that it's really a fine-tuned experience that's being provided. And it's like, okay, this is what I am giving you. So then the question, I think, becomes...
Why is he putting jump scare enemies that drain 75% of my health? Yeah.
Right. Yes. Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. Or if the OGs from Dark Souls will remember the skeletons, there's one, it's a jump scare that you can't see, it's from off camera, and it's a giant skeleton that kicks you off a ledge, and it's just fucking out of nowhere, and you're just gone, you're just dead, like, and it's complete, it's just total bullshit, but, you know, then you know that skeleton is there, and so there's an interesting kind of dynamic. I actually think that the jump scares are less, like, that to me at a certain point is more about emphasizing, like, no, you will die, you have to learn. Like, this is the number one thing with this series, with, you know, the design philosophy for all of his games is, you know, you will die, you will fail, but you will learn as a result, you will improve, and even if the improvement at first is just the knowledge, it's that meta level knowledge of the game and you know what's in it that will help you to succeed the next time. I think that's in a slightly different category than things like, yeah, bosses that are immune to certain status effects or whatever.
Yeah, and I guess we could just talk about that kind of stuff where boss, like, so it sets up, like, what I think a fair boss fight is early on and then changes that pretty fast, you know? So, like, it does set an expectation of, like, you can be able to use your summons, you'll be able to use, you know, XYZ items, or they'll be effective. And then it's very, you know, common that you'll just run into it because you should build your character around a certain kind of attack or damage or whatever. And then you'll just hit a boss that's immune to that status effect and you're kind of just screwed. You know, there are bosses that don't get Scarlet Rot or don't get bleed or don't get lightning status effects or they're strong. Like, a lot of enemies that are weak to magic damage, I think, really mess me up sometimes because I don't do any magic damage as far as I can tell, and a lot of you know, there are whole boss types that, you know, will just mess you, like, don't apply to your build, or it's, you know, you'd really struggle with those, and that's kind of just the way it is, and it's good because it forces you to, like, you kind of do rely on certain crutches, I know I have, and they've been kind of taken away because I found out I can deal with bosses that are slow-ish. Or not slow, but, like, you know, not hyper-fast. And hyper-fast bosses will just really mess me up, and I got to get better at, you know, dodging that initial, you know, damage and their attacks, because I kind of weak with, you know, using spirit summons to aggro them, using a bunch of big slow heavy attacks to mess with their poise and, you know, down them. But these fast bosses, you almost never, it's very difficult to, you know, break their poise, because it's very hard to hit them at all. And that's really where I've been struggling.
Have you tried getting up in their face?
Yes, I have been stuck at these bosses for a long time.
Yeah. Go on.
The game does let you, dodging toward a boss is often actually pretty good. Even though your instincts,
that was the big
backwards
lesson when I was referring to earlier about like the tree guardian or whatever. I forget what they're called, but you know what I mean. There's like these,
yeah,
the
big
mini
horsemen, yeah.
Yeah, and no, well, yes, exactly. Yeah, and they got the big, they're basically like a sort of mini boss version of Margit, is sort of how I classify them, without all of his abilities, although they do have one very annoying range spell. But yeah, I was really, because like I noticed my so Dark Souls and a lot of the previous games, or at least, you know, yeah, a lot, and to this game even to some extent, I've noticed people like Larich was talking about using the shield. There's a lot of shield play. There's a lot of standing in place. There's a lot of kind of avoidance. And I was trying to play that way, and it really feels, I mean, the game does a great job in terms of visual and sonic direction to, like, the bosses are scary and imposing, and, like, you feel afraid of them, and you want to put distance between yourselves and them. It's like they're coming at you, and they're coming at you fast with a huge sword, and you're like, fuck, right? And so the instinct is, especially because you have this tool of this dodge roll that's so good, and the instinct is to dodge away.
One thing, I think if you don't play these games, the dodge gives you like fighting game style iframes.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a big deal, right? Like you cannot get hurt if you time it perfectly. You can get hit with an attack, like a big AoE attack will hit you, but not damage you. So you like being in this iframe state is advantageous to you, and you can kind of cause this thing where you panic and you just dodge to create as many iframes as you can.
But
you get fucked up.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just never works. So what the lesson that I learned from these tree guardians that I enjoy sparring with is, you roll towards them and you get in, you do a bunch. That was the other, I guess, thing with the stagger was I just do a bunch of DPS and don't necessarily worry too much about stagger with, you know, two or three or sometimes even four, but usually two or three light attacks. And then dodge as they're coming, and that was the other thing that I noticed was the attack animations for the enemies. Like the first time I really noticed this was with Margit, and it was causing me trouble in that fight. It was really the only thing about that fight that caused me much trouble, and then I've seen it replicated elsewhere, especially with those tree guardians. Is that like normally in a game, especially like, you know, third person action game like this. The designer rewards you for noticing the enemy about to attack in a very grug way. It's sort of a one for one, like, you know, the enemy starts the boss or whoever starts telegraphing that they're going to attack. You notice that, you jam on your dodge, evade, roll, whatever, and then you don't get hit. That is not how these fights go. The wind up on their attacks takes a long time, and you have to first know, like, just based on the timing of the attack, when it's going to fall, part of which is also just not instantly, like, you have to train yourself. You see him, this big scary dude coming at you with this big scary sword, you have to train yourself not to immediately try to roll away. One of the things I noticed though was that also gives you an opportunity to get hits in before the attack animation completes and you you'd have to roll away at the appropriate time. So it becomes, at least in for my character, the way I'm playing it, kind of like a hit and run thing. And I find that generally pretty effective.
Mm-hmm. So have you figured out on those guys that this is the specific tree guardians? They have like they're a knight. They have a sword, like a sword and a shield, or some weapon and a shield. If you stay on their shield side, they have a more limited move set. that's less effective than if you go weapon side.
No, I didn't. I'll try to.
So if you roll to their shield side, they have a. I think only. I don't know. I didn't look into it that heavily but I just noticed that they have fewer moves that are less devastating on their shield side. They can like hit you with the shield, but it doesn't do as much damage. It's not as, you know, long range as when they do the big, you know, hit you with the sword or the lance thing. So
interesting.
You know, there's a little bit of realism in that, you know, that you do want to be shield side of somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't want to. Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I noticed. So on that topic too, is, and I was aware of this trap just from having played, a fair amount of Dark Souls and Bloodborne of not always locking on. Have you learned that lesson or
yeah. So I actually played the first, cause I'm new to these games. Pretty new. I played like the first 6 hours without even using it. Like any kind of lock on. And I realized that was probably a mistake, and a lot of enemies are
probably well in certain ways, but also because lock on is a trap. It's not that it's not useful or that you shouldn't ever use it, but it's especially in boss fights. Like you got to learn to disengage. It's critical.
I definitely noticed that like enemies that were flying or low to the ground, if it wasn't like if the enemy was any kind of like, at a different level than you, like either it's below you or above you or you know moving quickly. Lock-on was the only way to get, like, actually a good hit on the enemy, because you'll just, like, swing at the mid-level if you don't lock-on to somebody. There's no, like, downstroke or upstroke, really, in terms of attacks, unless, you know, you lock-on to something. So, but, yeah, I have noticed that it's definitely, especially since the dragon. The dragons are really good at teaching you that, and they're everywhere.
Yes. Like, a dragon will. Yep.
Because you also, because it locks on to the parts of the dragon you can't hit. It'll lock onto their chest or their head, and to fight dragons, you got to be like hitting their legs and stuff and wings, but you won't lock onto those, so you have to break lock and then mess up, like hit attack their legs because that's the part on the ground, or you'll be under it swinging your sword at their head or chest and you're just missing it, like a retard, which is, it's a good way of teaching. I think the dragons are good enemies because they're pretty tough and they can one shot you or two shot you. With a lot of their attacks, but not all their attacks. So you have some staying power fighting them. They're also pretty slow, and they'll teach you mechanics really well in that respect.
I found them useful for mounted combat training. run in on your mount and wail on them for a little bit, and then get out.
Yeah,
that also helps you avoid the big AOE attacks.
Yeah, there's a big AOE attack boss in. Later on that I don't think you've gotten to. And there's this cool thing where there's one of the summons is there that like the NPC summons if you do certain stuff. If you bring him in, because he summons actually after you his summon point is actually inside the boss arena. It's not like before the boss arena. So if you summon him in, he will he comes in and he doesn't give the boss a buff in terms of health or anything. But he will disable you using your own mount. Because that boss fight lets you use your mount if you don't summon him in, which obviously
interesting.
It's a big yeah. AOE boss, and your mount's really good to have to avoid his like big it's stupidly massive AOE attacks. But this NPC is obviously like a really almost like a hard counter to the boss, so he's really useful to have. But you will get messed up if you bring him, it's a good one of those balanced things. I actually did it. Didn't even know you could bring him in, and I just used my horse and all the skills you learn fighting dragons to beat him first try. With I had some RNG help, of course, but
hey man, well, okay, so yeah, so that to circle back to our to the previous thing, then like yeah, it's interesting. Like, what's fair then, right? I mean, given like especially we're this kind of a game, which really is I mean, generally speaking, the Souls games are kind of sandboxy, but this game is definitely the most sandboxy, I think, to date. Why don't you talk about your experience with cheese, and then I'll say some stuff.
I think so. There are certain like bosses and things that are like just explicitly meant to be like dirt nasty and mess you up really fast and. But also there are like, and they seem almost intentional in some ways. Like, there are things you can do where you can position yourself like not like if you see a really hard mini boss, right, and you can get above them in like on the in the open world, even if it's like really far away from this thing. But you can see that mini boss. It's very common you can hit them with like a bunch of arrows, like 40 arrows from your crossbow from far away, even if you're not a crossbow build, which I'm not, because you can just change weapons to it. And I don't feel bad about that at all, even though I'm like not fighting the enemy, because it'll like two-shot you and it attacks faster than you can dodge. And it's like in a tiny enclosed space. It's clearly meant to be a challenge. And yeah, you can, if you really want to, you can go in there and like fight it with pure skill and, you know, have a very high level of skill, but it's clearly like unfair. Like, hey, there's this area that there's this tiny room. This enemy does an AoE attack of basically most of the room. Why don't you go in there and fight it? Right. It's no, I'm not. Or you can like, there's certain bosses that, you know, you can actually see them from really far away in the open world, in their boss room. And there's like if you can see them, if you're close enough, you can like fire an arrow at them from that far away and actually like kill them before you even, you know, get them, see them. And I think that's fair. Like they will take away certain things you have. They will, you know, do all this stuff to you. That's, you know, not, they kind of set what a fair fight is with, like, I think Margit and Godric. And then they start breaking those rules a little bit, and it's totally fine to break the rules back.
Yeah, that's not as usually like overlevel
yourself. There's like there's limits to it, but if there's one boss in like in one of the areas that's really hard, he actually is one of those like Uno reverse card things. He has his own summons. Like he will summon in stuff to mess you up, and it's really strong. He gets multiple summons. You only get one. But there's a window in his, you can see into his boss room before you go into it, and you can just mess him up with arrows, and it's a whole boss. So you can do that, a lot of mini bosses, you can do that too. You can hit them from like outside of the room, but and it seems almost intentional because it's a tiny window.
It's definitely intentional. The first trap that I fell into, which I also like avoided, I'll tell the story. So in Dark Souls, there's a fairly early encounter with a dragon. I think I mentioned it's the fire dragon. It's like kind of a set piece fight, and there's a bonfire on the right side of the bridge of this castle with the gate on the left side leading further into the game, and it's the same. That's the shot that's recreated at just immediately after the Margit fight. That dragon, you can, because I was doing the wiki thing, you can shoot arrows at its tail, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 arrows, and it will drop a sword that is essentially OP for 5-6 hours into the game. However, that sword scales like dog shit. So it's a kind of a trap of like the designer put this thing in there that you can use, and yes, you can essentially cheese the boss with arrows from a distance. You actually have to kind of get underneath the bridge, and anyway, and then you get this item as a reward that's really, really good. But if you invest essentially sword upgrading items that are very, very rare into it, you're essentially wasting them and dooming yourself. So it's kind of like a new player trap in certain ways. Like intentionally. And so yeah, no, I mean given that the ability to shoot arrows at the fire dragon was included in the game from that far back all the way, clearly this is an intentional decision. It speaks to the kind of sandboxy nature of this, which then again gets into, I think, the kind of collective player response of, you know, how much of it is, what kind of experience do you want to have? Do you want to figure out stuff on your own? Do you want to look into the wikis for the best builds and things that particular bosses are, you know, weak to, etc.?
Yeah. So, which reminds me, I've been thinking about doing a poll on post, or maybe it's just one of the comments below if you feel like it, but I'm considering changing, like, doing a build, a respec. I have all the respec items. I haven't done it yet. But if you suggest to me a cool build, I will. I think I'm about level 110. If you suggest a cool build, I will change my build to it if it sounds good. But the community stuff is very interesting because it's so the game is open world and it's really cool open world because they don't signpost everything and tell you where everything is. And like if you get a quest from a quest giver, he'll just say like, hey, go around here and maybe it's over here and figure stuff out. The game's like very opaque with how quests are supposed to be done, to the point where it's actually, I mean, it's cool, like it gives the world a different feeling, right, where you just like run into people and like get stuff from them, or you know, have to like go actually look around for something instead of just following a beacon on an open world map, which is very cool. And it's but the a lot of the quest lines are almost undoable without a guide. Like there are side quests that are literally like there's no way, there's like there's multiple. I did a quest line that I want to see if you'll do it because I don't want to spoil it yet because it's got some like cool stuff going on thematically and in terms of like what the world is and lore wise, but there's absolutely no way you could. There are multiple points that like it does. It's you have to go to certain sites of grace and do certain things that you don't even know exist without a guide because they're like hidden.
Well, let's see if I can figure. I'm curious. I'm gonna see if I can figure it out. Because yeah, I don't. I'm deliberately avoiding as much of that as I possibly
like,
can.
No, like there is no way. Like
then I'll just miss
like,
it.
Like I saw the community was like going, holy shit, how the hell we're supposed to. The best thing is that it is linked to like I was doing it because I thought it was a cool quest, and I would just Google how to do the next thing. This is just like retarded. There's no way. There's no way. I want to interact with these cool characters again, but I don't even know how because. They left somewhere, you know. So
I was like, okay, well maybe I don't know. We'll see. Yeah,
I was looking at the guides, and it's like, oh, this is so dirty. Like, there's no way. There's actually one like main story beat that's like that, where it's like, how am I supposed to know to do that thing? Like, I was stuck on the mainline story without even knowing I was stuck because I was just going around doing stuff at a certain point. Like, okay, well. I beat this guy who's like a boss that seemed very important and story-based. But like you're supposed to rest at a site of grace, not near him, but right by him, and it pops a thing. But I just like touched the grace point because I didn't need any special to heal or level up at that point. So I just touched that and walked away and like went back into the world to do stuff. And I'd use a guide to figure that out because there's no reason for you to ever go back to that grace point. It's in the middle of nowhere by nothing. But you have to go there and do certain things in the Grace Point menu. And I think, like, too opaque to be done by a normal person. It's a unique thing, and I think the game understands that it's made for to have, like, a community and a wiki and walkthroughs. And I think that's good. That's interesting. It's just a different way to do it, but I think it's almost impossible to play the open. Like, I think I don't. I don't think I would ever found that had I not consulted a wiki. You know, ever. And I don't have a problem with that. Like, that's how that game is. The game is made, and you know, it's kind of balanced. I don't want to say balanced because it's a word, but it's like the game is definitely designed around you consulting a walkthrough at some point. It's not a single player experience, even if you don't. Summon or invade. It is.
Yeah. It is a. Yes. 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 It
is
inherently.
It's like an arcade game with. It's like an arcade game with your buddies. Like, hey, how do I get? You're in an arcade. Like, hey, how do I beat this boss? You know, and you can. It's totally acceptable. Like, hey, ask your buddy, how'd you beat this guy, or how'd you do X, Y, Z? How'd you get that weapon? You know. Like, I'll watch a video online or YouTube and it's like, oh, that's a cool sword he's got. Where's that sword? I'm gonna just Google sword name, location, and I feel no shame in. Doing that, you know,
absolutely.
That's how I got my cool sword. You know, I saw Google sword name location, and there we went.
Okay. Was there anything else? What did we?
Do you want to do the lore stuff or like?
Yes, definitely. We should talk a little bit about lore, and then. Yeah. Okay. So,
Do you want to do like a build update on how you're doing your stuff?
Well, I haven't actually had it. I've just been busy with IRL stuff for a little bit, so I haven't. My build is kind of where I left it. Although I got dexterity. I mean, I'm way lower level. I'm like less than half of your level at this point. And But I think I kind of maxed out on dexterity for now, which is, you know, I think okay. I think I'm going to try to start scaling either faith, or at least to a certain point, or what I really want to do is intelligence. Like, I think this game is and I kind of got a little of that from Bloodborne. There was like cool spells, but they, you know, required just insane leveling in intelligence. And I think that there's going to be cool stuff for like a dexterity intelligence build, which I would kind of gravitate towards anyway. But it's obviously going to take time.
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot, which is why I'm open to respec suggestions, where I was kind of doing strength decks because that's what my sword scales off of. But strength decks kind of sucks, because it just does. And because strength is kind of underappreciated in a lot of ways, and under the, it's not.
Yeah,
the
game strength is another one of those traps. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at least in this game.
Yeah, or just, I think a lot of things. I think certain skills are kind of overpowered. So I'm trying to, like, my weapon does some amount of bleed. It's not a bleed weapon. It has a bleed effect, but it's not like a massive bleed effect. So I rarely proc the bleed effect, status effect on enemies. And that's because I didn't put anything in arcane and bleed a lot of arcane skill, which is like luck, basically, is tied to arcane. And so
yeah, I was not clear at all on what arcane even is, really.
It's basically luck, but I mean, there's a little more going on, but it's how often do you proc certain effects, status effects. And it also is a barrier, you know, there's a minimum threshold for certain things as well. But, yeah, I've been using, also, well, there's like ways you can kind of gain strength. If you two-hand a weapon, you can actually get like 50% strength bonus, which is pretty substantial once you get high level. Like, if you have like 40 strength and then you put two hands on your sword, you get 60 strength.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a big deal, you know. But yeah, I've kind of been stuck in strength decks, and I've been like realizing that I need to put more points in arcane, but I'm pretty high level now. It's almost too late to really like change a build in game. I also do like respec, but I do have like 3 or 4 of the respec items. I'm not worried about like respecing. And it's, the game's pretty generous with weapon upgrades as well. Like, I could max level another weapon if I want to, and I have. I just find like the familiarity, once you kind of figure out weapon's moveset, the familiarity is, you know, it makes you better with it than you would be with a better on paper weapon. You know, the Bloodhound Fang I use right now has a really good kind of very long ranged light attack. It's got a big swing. Its special is very unique in that it is it's like a heavy attack, but with a part of the attack animation is a backwards roll. So it's a heavy attack that creates space, which is really dirty. And then after that heavy attack, it can do like an anime, you know, like warp into, so you can uppercut, roll back, and then do a heavy attack, and it'll do like the anime, like warp forward into the enemy's face and do a really strong attack. It's really nasty, especially against like, it's not super useful against bosses, but it's situational, but it's really good against like powerful enemies in the open world, which you'll fight a lot. It's a really good mini boss, counter. So I really like that weapon. I kind of want to build that'll stick with that weapon, but maybe be a little more effective and get some more out of it, because I definitely have hit a wall in terms of like progression. But yeah, that's my build update. Also, I put minimum points into INT and faith and arcane to use certain spells. Like, you really want to have status effects on your swords. You really want to have certain spells. Like, you want to be able to have enough spells to do certain stuff, like cure poison, and there's like kind of quality of life stuff. So I definitely am doing that as well.
Cool. All right, well, yeah, definitely suggestions welcome in the comments.
Yeah.
As for lore, I haven't, as I said, I'm sort of haven't progressed that much, but I have some thoughts, and you know, I'm reluctant. We've taken a very heavily kind of like spoilers are gay kind of attitude of in things in general, and so I'm not going to ask you like quote not to spoil me stuff, but I think you get what I'm saying.
So the reason why I think it's okay,
Shakespeare's plays are like he leads off with spoilers, right? That's how it works. And a good work of art shouldn't require you not knowing like the story beats, right? Like a good story can be retold, right? Or you know, it shouldn't be a surprise. It shouldn't have to be a surprise. But there's this kind of, we're talking about what is just a character do in this game, and that's a, and the way like your character behaves in the world. We talk about like, what archetype is he, and we brought up there's obviously a Ronin or a, you know, a cowboy gunfighter or a knight, like kind of questing element to it. But I think the biggest archetype that your character is doing is a kind of a noir detective thing more than anything else. Even though it's a fantasy setting, not a detective unraveling a conspiracy in a city. You kind of come upon this world, and there's been an apocalypse already, right? And your kind of goal is to figure out what happened and then address it, like a detective unraveling a conspiracy. And there's all kinds of forces pulling you in certain directions and telling you certain things and maybe lying to you or not. But they're all kind of apathetic because the world's ended. No one actually is too invested in stopping you, which is funny. But the feel is very much, I think, of a someone figuring out, like solving a murder, if you will. Like what caused the apocalypse, or who can fix it? Which of these factions is the best at fixing it? And that seems to be the if not theme, like the archetype that the game is kind of riding on a lot.
Yeah, it's almost like it's because we were talking about that before the show, and I definitely agree with that take. And now that you're talking about it more, it's like a succession fight, I think, is kind of the way to look at it. It's sort of is the Elden Ring, right? I mean, this is the first cutscene, is, you know, the Elden Ring was shattered, and the children of this deity there was this essentially like universe spanning civil war type thing, and now it's like, okay, well, who is going to claim the mantle of the Elden Ring, right? But it's like, you know, I guess there's a kind of murder mystery aspect to it in the context of this like succession battle among deities and demigods and so on.
And the other thing is that everyone seems, there's also like obviously a lot of apathy in the world, and you can, if everyone seems like okay with it when you betray them, except certain people don't, but the vast majority of people are like, well, you should back me and for XYZ. And if you don't, they're like, well, oh well, this sucks. I'll still sell you items from my item shop or upgrade your stuff. And that's pretty common. I've only dealt with one, actual betrayal. And, you know, and there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of endings to this game. I did look at that. There's seven or six. So you can, you know, find yourself doing certain things. There's the nature of the kind of figuring things out, the kind of detective bit. There's also like a kind of a will to power element. That's where I think there's two like tension ideas that have some tension that we discussed. And the first idea that I think is very obvious, and it's part of just Western RPGs in a certain sense mechanically, so it's hard to get away from it, is that the world is essentially a power vacuum that you step into as a new player, and every faction is basically extremely weak and apathetic and has kind of pulled themselves back even in their territory to like just their castle pretty much, and no one really cares to influence the world. They're all kind of, if not content, like they don't think they can change it, and you as like the player are kind of a new faction that has a certain amount of will to power to change things and fight people. And you know, that's kind of the element, is like you can fight and get stronger and, you know, make cut deals with these factions and kind of step into the power vacuum, and eventually you kind of rule the world right at the end, or you're acquiring the runes to have the power to rule the world, whatever. What if you do or not, it's kind of up to you, it seems. But there's a big like element of kind of Nietzschean stuff where everyone else in this world is apathetic. You are arriving on it with a will to power, and you do like you make some changes. Like you, the character definitely has a lot of influence on the world. Is not represented super well mechanically. Like even if you like beat a boss in an area, you can't like ever clear it of enemies. But that's mostly more of like the FromSoft. You know, I mean, there's some dissonance, I guess, that you like when you kill like Godric, right? His castle infinitely respawns enemies that will attack you when they, in theory, would just leave. But it does feel like you are the, like you're the major actor in this world, and everyone kind of adjusts to you. They don't tend to try to improve their lot. Mostly, they'll ask for you to do quests for them, but. There was one quest line I did where I got this guy the quest item, and he was just like, you keep it, bro. I don't really want that. I don't want to follow my dreams. I don't want to follow my dreams that I told you, you know, a couple hours ago were like the most important thing in my whole life that I needed this item for. You need it to do XYZ. Other quests, you go do that. And that didn't, that would feel weird in other RPGs, right? Like if you were in Skyrim and you turned in a quest item, he's like, I don't care so much for it. It's all yours. After talking about how much he needed it, you know, I'd be like, well, that's weird. But in this game, right. It kind of makes sense because no one actually wants anything in this world. They kind of just want to suffer alone and kind of mess that up by helping. Like, that is a theme where, like, you will help a quest giver and, like, ruin their life, you know? You know, you go to, like, deliver somebody the thing and you come back to them and they got stabbed or whatever, you know?
Yeah, well, that's kind of the most emotionally affecting vignette, and maybe one of the things you were talking about in so far that I've encountered was the this innocent girl, and I want to put a mental pin on that because we got to talk about the incel thing and then maybe wrap up. But the there's this innocent girl who clearly just like survived an ambush on her whatever caravan and asks you to deliver a letter to her father in the castle down below. And so you go, it's like, okay, so you go and you fight through the, what I guess there are they other tarnished? It's not clear. In Dark Souls, everybody was undead. I'm not entirely clear what the mooks are. I mean, the ones that aren't,
Demi-humans.
Demi-humans, is that what they are? Okay. But tarnished and demi, but tarnished and not demi-humans. They're not, okay, yeah.
Tarnished are basically people with agency at a certain point.
Like, yeah, which
agency
is...
agency is tarnished.
Yeah, which is... I don't quite... Maybe that's a lore point, and I'll learn more about that. But in any case, yeah, so you fight your way to the top of the castle. You meet her dad, and he's like, thanks for bringing me this. Tell her, you know, I'll see her later, you know, when I have some stuff to do. And you go back to where she is, and of course she's dead. and if you visit again later, you know, he's there, and he's like, oh shit, I fucked up so bad. And then later, I was wandering around and I came across a shack in the woods called the Revenge Shack or something, and his spirit, I guess, manifested, and then he gave me a cool weapon when I defeated. It was a relatively hard fight. I mean, it was a, you know, human style NPC duel, and those can be fun too. And but yeah, it was.
Speaking of cheese, I didn't do it, but I saw a walkthrough that said after he gives you his speech about how he fucked up and he's like very sad. The meta game, the best way to handle that next fight is just to kill him right then and there. Because he'll drop all his gear that he'll give you.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fight back.
Right.
Which is really.
So you could just, yeah. Up. Well, and that strikes me as probably having been intentional in that, like, yeah, if you want to, like, cause, like, the psychological mood in that scene is he's just extremely, I mean, obviously he just, his daughter's dead because he was neglectful and stupid. And maybe he's not going to fight back if someone attacks him out of the blue in that moment. So, Yeah, no, that was actually like the NPC. I do rather enjoy the duels, the NPC duels, and that was not like super hard, but on the harder end. But I just enjoyed it, and I didn't have to beat my head against it too hard in the end to win that fight. But yeah, I think it speaks to the point you're making about just the theme, and I don't know how important or if that's going to be important in any certain terms in terms of the narrative. What I will say on the note about the I think the maiden thing, because I was listening to a little bit of our first episode on Elden Ring, and I realized I brought up this thing about the maidens, and we never rounded it out. But did you have more on that? Did you want to talk more? Sorry, before we transition, maybe.
No, we can go to the maiden stuff, all the GF stuff.
Well, it speaks to the so you were saying before about like how Tarnished have agency, and you enter this world as like a almost uniquely tarnished with almost a unique level of agency. And that's it's interesting that
the game makes quite clear that you are not on par with the demigods in power yet, but you are on par with them as like an actor.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes, like, absolutely. Well, in some ways even superior, or at least there was, so the one of the first scenes is there's this one of the female archetypes, I don't remember. This is like a last, notes within notes. But yeah, one of the female archetypes is the one who gives you, she appears to you out of the blue early on in the game. Of course, you accept her invitation because you kind of screwed if you don't. And oh yeah, that was one of the, basically the first words that you hear an NPC tell you from the guy in the creepy white mask is like, oh, you're going to have a problem until you get a girlfriend. like you need a girlfriend in order to level up, essentially. So a girl appears out of thin air magically, because that's how you get GF's IRL, and she gives you a horse and says, you're a very special boy, here's a horse. And and then you as you progress through the game, and eventually I forget if it's she or some friend of hers,
there's two potential GFs, right? Yeah, there's like two potential GFs, I think, that they introduce you to. It's the girl who's like messed up with the face, and then the witch girl are kind of both.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I forget which one I chose. That was the note within the note that I want to talk about was maybe just a brief aside and something to talk about another time, maybe, is how like I started keeping a notebook because like the game doesn't have a quest journal, which is great. It's fantastic. I'm glad that they did it. It's a throwback to like 1980s, 1990s style dungeon crawlers with the grid maps that you have to keep by pencil by yourself, because the game doesn't have an auto map. And but rather than doing it at a kind of mechanical level in terms of interacting with the game for just like the kind of baseline mechanical challenge, it's in order to keep the lore straight and your quest line straight and that kind of stuff. And they'll say a name once, say a meet a person here, and never say it again. And if you try to ask the person who gave you that quest again about it, he'll just tell you to fuck off. And so write that shit down and like IRL with your notepad, because you are your character. He's forcing you to role play. It's great. In any case, yeah. So the girl gives you the horse, and then there's this interesting aside. It was like, oh, I knew I chose you, so it was like, it was kind of like, it wasn't necessarily 100% certain. Like you're not the Harry Potter, like, child of destiny just cause. It's like, no, there's some question here. There's some room for slippage, but yeah, it's you are in some sense elevated and selected at the outset, and then like to some extent the kind of narrative theme is living up to that selection. I at least that's what I'm getting out of it.
I think the GFs get less important as the game goes on, because you become like a more of a, as you gain more power, you gain more agency. And I did the very long quest line and like effectively got Witch GF. I did all the stuff. That was a long quest line, and there's a lot of cool boss fights. I recommend, if you're playing the game, if you can figure it out, do more of the Witch GF stuff, because I think
the Blue Witch?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one that she was speaking my language. She was like, all this shit's gay, like, join me and we're gonna fuck it up. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, it seems like every faction has almost there's a most factions, some factions don't, but every faction you interact with is like, hey, let's burn it down, bro. Like, there's one that's like they were talking. There's like, have you met any of the frenzy people yet?
No, I don't think so. I met so the white mask guy was like,
he's a frenzy guy, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So then he was like, hey, by the way, you can kill people for fun. I'm like, tell me more.
Yeah. They're interested. there's like the Dark Brotherhood people. There's him. And both of them seem to have like their factions that are like, hey, let's dude, this is gay. Like everyone agrees like the system is bad. Just it's this funny mirror, I think, of reality, right? Where every political faction at a certain point, if you dig down, is like, yeah, this whole thing is terrible. It needs to go. Like neoliberalism is, you know, hell at a certain point. But no one has like the agency or power to deal with it except for you, which is a, you know,
also true.
Interesting commentary on you know, how people view themselves and society. But yeah, the frenzy guys were speaking like they were like interesting. They did some interesting stuff. But then one like was doing some real commie bullshit. So I just attacked him and started a fight with him.
Nice.
A strong enemy. Cause like, you know,
did you
what?
Beat him? Could you beat him?
Oh yeah.
Nice.
Almost every NPC, you can fight almost every NPC.
Almost anyone. Yeah, I accidentally drew aggro on someone. I'm like, fuck, I'm looking for, I'm sure there's some mechanic to.
There is a mechanic to de-aggro. I don't know if every NPC can do it though.
But whatever. Well, if I can. Yeah. You know, that's part of the thing.
Yeah. Have you met the Pope yet?
No, that's funny. No. Wow. I'm psyched. Yeah, no. Is he in the big, like, the shiny capital?
No, he's in a little cathedral. It's like on a mountain somewhere.
Okay.
It's kind of it's also that Asian thing of like not quite understanding what a bishop does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
He's very monk like for a pope. Yeah.
That's funny. Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to hit, or maybe we should? Okay, no, I want to talk about. Okay, we didn't. I want to talk about the GF incel angle to it. So it's interesting. I don't quite get what he's doing yet, but it's clear that he's doing something. It's funny that he gives you a whore, just in your like chill zone whenever you want. I haven't partaken, and I'm not going to. You were saying, I guess. So what is it? She gives you a buff, but then there's a worse debuff for a period of time.
No,
is that?
No. There's a debuff and there's a buff to certain things, but you take a health 25% health penalty. And there's
you give her your vril in exchange for something. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually did that quest line. It's actually quite. I enjoyed it. But you know, I'm not gonna discuss that whole quest line. Also, that's another one I had to do guides for because it's really stupid. Like
Here's another example where your intuition as a player is like, I'm just not even going to fuck with that, right? And like,
yeah,
literally.
So I had one moment that really, it wasn't that, but really spiked my player intuition of like, I'm not going to fuck with that. But it was similar. And then I was like, wait, I'm just going to wiki this and see how this plays out. It's like, oh wait, there's a really cool boss fight. If I don't do this, I'll miss all this.
Oh, okay. So you just wanted the boss fight.
And also, it has no negative effects on anything else. You know, there was no negative effects on anything else.
Okay.
And I was like, oh well, it wasn't that fight. That there's more negative intuition in that fight. Also, the game is very chill on you. Like, if you get somebody killed, it's not a big deal usually, because you can get their bell bearing and just have their items in the shop. Like, if there's an NPC that gives you XYZ products that you only get from them, and in their quest line they get killed or you kill them. You can still buy their stuff at the shop. Like, that happened to me a couple times.
I didn't even know what a bell bearing was. I was like, why offer bell bearing? What the fuck does that even mean? And I'm so now I've learned. Cool, thanks.
Yeah. Also, if you really want to be a bastard, you can, all the merchants at the open world.
Mm-hmm.
You can kill them all, and
just take all their shit. But he warned you. The first one was like, don't kill us. We're gonna fucking make your life hell.
I mean, you can roll a dice how you want. But you can get all their bell bearings and give them to the bell bearing lady, and then she becomes the master shop that you can just buy everything from without having to go and into these bizarre.
But honestly, I haven't really, so far at least, I've only encountered, I don't know, half a dozen merchants or so. Like, they have, you know, I always buy the smithing stones first, and then, like, what sometimes they'll have something worthwhile, but usually it's just like arrows or something. It's like, I don't need to, you know.
I would also advise you buy the stone sword keys whenever you see them.
Yes, yes. That's always the first thing I spend money on. Yeah. And yeah, oh, always, always, always. And then smithing stones, and then like something, you know, something shiny that looks cool. And there's not necessarily much of that. So yeah. No, I'm curious to see where he goes though with the like, because that's an interesting wrinkle in the formula, is this idea of like, no, you need a companion, you need a female companion, otherwise you're not going to make it. That was never like a explicit or implicit or at all kind of a thing in I guess I have, again, with the caveat of Sekiro, but which I assume is pretty, well, no, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, interestingly, so Demon Souls, she wasn't your GF exactly, but she was a very cool visual design character. I'll send you a picture, but basically,
I have a thing on this, because I'm not familiar with the genre. And I don't think there was one in Sekiro, but there was some talk in the community that they call them like level up girlfriends, is the joke.
Yeah.
That this is the best level up girlfriend. But apparently other games do have some kind of chick involved with leveling up.
Demon Souls in particular, I don't even know if she had a name, but she was like this woman of prophecy who was blind because there was candle wax over her eyes at all times. And she would help you out. I think you could kill her. I don't remember. I never dared. Yeah, she was a very interesting kind of character, and she was in Demon Souls and kind of not, she was at a more of a distance remove. She was just kind of like, so the Demon Souls sort of takes place in this, cathedral at the junction between planes of existence. And she's like the maiden, she's like the Vestal Virgin tending to the flame in this, you know, multiversal cathedral or something like that. I don't remember all the fucking lore, who knows, but that's what I remember out of it. And so she wasn't like your GF, but she was there for you, and you were the only, and that was the dynamic wasn't, it was more like other people had tried and failed, you're the most recent, the latest, and perhaps the last like hope. And so she is invested in your success for that reason. But she's a very, I'm actually giving her way more thematic. Like she's thematically not, I mean, she's like in most of the cutscenes just because there's not a whole lot of cutscenes, but it's thematically, she's almost non-existent other than that. Yeah. Whereas this is like woven into the narrative.
Yeah. I don't want to do too much spoiler stuff, but like it got very explicit that like, you were in a romantic relationship with one of the girls that if you do a certain quest line, like if you do the certain things, like it implies a romance, which was interesting. It's very bare bones. Obviously it's the Souls game.
Right.
But like there are strong implications of like, oh, that's, cool, we're an item.
We're an item now. Yeah. Consort, divine consort. No, I'm looking forward to it. I think that's like when I first saw this, I was like, okay, it felt a little dissonant. Maybe it is a little dissonant, but I also it works.
I had to go way off the beaten path to do this stuff too. Like there was no way that it was intentional.
You know what? I think I know. Won't. Is this also for the Blue GF? I'm 100%. I'm committed. I'm gonna do my damnedest to get through Blue GF's. That was actually when I started taking notes. Was in those conversations.
Oh yes, but you can fuck up Blue GF pretty easily. I had to use some guides because you can fuck it up like way. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Well, again, with the role playing, you know, art imitates life.
Yeah.
Maybe I just have to live with the disappointment of, you know, she could have been the one.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's probably a good place to end it. Unless you have more? Was there more you wanted to say?
No. That's basically it. I kind of want to get into Nietzschean versus Zen stuff.
Yeah, Buddhism and Nietzscheanism.
We can save that.
We can save that. Because
there is this tension between Nietzsche. And the funny, they're both like, I don't want to call it, they're not even like big narratives. They're almost like sub-narratives, because any Japanese media product will have a certain Zen undertone, and any Western RPG product will have a certain Nietzschean undertone. But they're both pretty explicit in this narrative. Like, if they're not being minimized, and there is a pretty big tension between the two, which I want to talk about, but I want you to have played more.
Yeah, I'll play more of the game, get through more of the narrative, and we'll reconvene probably with Laritz, or maybe we can save him for when we've beaten the game. I don't know. Or maybe we could do both. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Also depends on his schedule. Okay, cool. Well, thanks as always. This has been great. Lots of fun. Hope you all enjoy. Again, feel free to drop, not spoilers, please, but build suggestions and so on. And yeah, stuff
I will
like that.
Respec, if it's cool, if you sell me on it, I will respec into that area. I'd awesome. Like to keep my sword, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm gonna do like a light. I think I'm gonna do samurai wizard, like not samurai, whatever. I don't know, wizard with a samurai sword. I think that's sort of what I'm tending towards, and I'm kind of, I don't know. We'll see, but I think I would like to do that. So yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.
I'm an MK Ultra victim. There's poison in my system. I'm an MK Ultra victim. There's poison in my system. I'm an